PFAS are chemicals that are often called forever chemicals because they can persist in the environment indefinitely. Due to the practice of applying sewage sludge containing PFAS as fertilizer, farmland here in Maine and across the country has been unknowingly contaminated, resulting in PFAS in the food we eat and the water we drink. Fortunately, there are ways to mitigate contamination and reduce public health risks. Today, we'll be talking about the impact of PFAS on farms and actions that are being taken on the state and federal level to protect farmers and eaters, including a lawsuit recently filed against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to regulate PFAS in sludge. This is Common Ground Radio, and I'm Holly Cederholm, your host for a conversation about local food and organic agriculture brought to you by the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. I'm joined by MOFCA's Executive Director, Sarah Alexander. The Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association is the oldest and largest state organic organization in the country. Sarah, welcome to Common Ground Radio.
Thank you for having me.
I'll also be talking with Laura Dumay, Staff Counsel with Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. PEER is an organization that shines the light on improper or illegal governmental actions and supports the work of other organizations. Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So I wanted to start and set the stage of what are PFAS and why is there growing concern around these chemicals? Sarah, can you start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So PFAS stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a class of chemicals. And commonly we think of these as being grease resistant, water resistant, heat resistant. Teflon is kind of one of the oldest and well-known uses of it, but there are thousands of these chemicals, and now they are ubiquitous in consumer products and a lot of things that we are exposed to every day. This has really become an issue that we've become involved with here in Maine because they are ending up, or now we're understanding that they are in agriculture, and that is primarily happening through sludge that is being spread on farm fields, and the sludge contains PFAS chemicals. And unfortunately, these chemicals do not break down over time. They're often referred to as forever chemicals. And so now we're discovering that sludge that has been spread sometimes even decades ago is still contaminating soil and water in our agricultural systems.
What is the impact of this sewage sludge that's contaminated with PFAS on farms in Maine?
So PFAS on farms in Maine over the last 5 or 6 years, well, really starting in 2016, the first farmer in Maine was found to have high levels of PFAS contamination on his dairy farm that was caused by sludge spreading. At that point, we thought maybe it was an isolated incident, but unfortunately, as more testing has been done, it's been shown that the sludge in the state of Maine, and really everywhere, I should mention, this is not just a Maine issue, even though I'm speaking to our experience here in Maine, that most sludge contains PFAS chemicals, and that's either coming from the household waste stream because of all of the products that contain PFAS, whether that's personal care products or upholstery or carpet or things that might be in your house that are contributing to the waste stream in addition to, you know, human waste. And so in addition to that wastewater stream, industrial contamination also contributes to sludge. And here in Maine, in the paper industry, several of the paper mills were using PFAS coating, and that PFAS coating and industrial sludge has also ended up on farm fields. So what we thought was an isolated incident starting in 2016, as more testing has been done in the state, it's shown that there are about 60 farms so far that have been found to have some level of water or soil contamination on their farm. We've had 5 farms that have gone out of business or have ceased operations because of the level of PFAS contamination and not being able to continue on that particular farm. And the PFAS ends up in the food that is being grown on these farms, but it also is having a big ecosystem impact as well. So it's contaminating water systems, homeowners, wells, and surface waters that are also contaminating wildlife. And it's devastating for farms to find this contamination. I think that the initial contamination that was found it did likely mean the end of that farm because we didn't have any support systems in place. We didn't have any solutions in place to help a farm navigate this situation. But through the work of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, in coordination with Maine Farm Land Trust and several of our state agencies, the Department of Agriculture, Conservation and Forestry, the Department of Environmental Protection, and the CDC, we've been able over the last few years to put critical safety nets in place for farmers to be able to navigate through the contamination, to get filtration on their water systems, to pivot their production, and find opportunities for moving forward on the farm so that our farms can remain viable and they can produce healthy and safe food for everybody.
Thank you. I'd like to get into more of those programs for farmer support a little bit later. I want to circle back to something that you said about PFAS contamination on farmland not being just a Maine issue. It's national in scope. So the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit that advocates for human and environmental health, estimates that since 2016, over 20 million acres of farmland in the U.S. have had sewage sludge applied to them as fertilizer. This sludge, per a provision of the Clean Water Act enacted in 1987, should be regulated for safety by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Laura, can you talk about the EPA's regulatory role regarding sludge?
Yes, absolutely. The primary question that we get from farmers is always, why on earth is this allowed? Because sewage sludge is, it's marketed as something that's supposed to be healthy for their land. It has all sorts of nutrients. And so everyone just counts on the EPA to make sure it's safe. And that is what the EPA is supposed to be doing. So I'll take you back a little bit and tell you about how this provision came to be. So for a long time in this country, we just disposed of our sewage sludge in water bodies. And in a lot of places, that meant taking it out on a barge and just dumping it into the ocean. And so in the late 1980s, folks started to realize that, unsurprisingly, this was a big problem for our oceans. And so they banned ocean dumping. But then they had to figure out what to do with the sludge. And so they came up with the idea of, well, why don't we take out all of the pathogens, make sure it's safe, and put it on land. And it's not even just farmland, it's golf courses, it's reclamation land, it's a huge amount of acreage. And so when Congress did this in the late 1980s, they required EPA to make sure that there were no toxins in the sewage sludge. And they also required EPA to reevaluate its regulations every 2 years. And when you think about it, this makes a lot of sense because technology is always improving. We might be able to detect substances that we had no way to detect before. We might find out that substances that we thought were safe are not actually safe. And we might have new substances entering the wastewater stream that then end up in the sewage sludge. What the lawsuit is about, and the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association is a plaintiff, also five farmers and ranchers from Texas who have been impacted, and the county, their own county, Johnson County in Texas, they're all plaintiffs on this lawsuit. We are bringing the lawsuit to get EPA to regulate PFAS in sewage sludge. So we think this is something EPA had ample information to regulate a long time ago and that it should be regulating it now.
So the lawsuit that you mentioned was filed in June by the ranchers in Johnson County, Texas. So it was citing this lack of adequate regulation by the agency. In July, MOFCA joined along with other plaintiffs. What was the set of events that brought the farmers to take this action initially? Can you go into the backstory a little bit of how these particular plaintiffs got involved?
Sure. So the farmers who are impacted by sewage sludge in Johnson County, Texas, also have a separate lawsuit against the manufacturer of the sewage sludge, but they have been incredibly courageous and wanting to be plaintiffs in this suit against EPA to get EPA to regulate it on a national level so no farmers have to deal with what they have had to deal with. They did not even spread this on their own property. It was spread on a neighbor's property in November 2022. The smell was so strong and nauseating that they actually called the county, and the county was incredibly responsive and got an environmental crimes investigator out there to take a look at what was going on. Through the process of the investigation, they discovered that this was sewage sludge that had been spread, next door with a permit. And through the course of the investigation, they ended up taking a look at PFAS levels. So they tested PFAS levels in the soil on our plaintiff's properties. They tested PFAS levels in the animals that had started to die because soon after the sewage sludge was spread, they had all these farm animals and household pets that began to get sick and die. Two dogs, a cat, two previously healthy horses, calf, all the fish in their stock ponds floated, just dead. Sand cranes that had been coming and eating fish from the stock ponds, dead on their property. Peacocks, ducks, chickens. I mean, it was really incredible what these families went through. And it turned out that they had very high levels of PFAS, for example, in the calf. Just to give you an idea, so the EPA has recently limited PFAS levels in the water supplied by municipalities, drinking water, to 4 parts per trillion. And they have also had a maximum contaminant level goal of 0 parts per trillion, which means basically that no, there's no safe level of this stuff. Okay. So 0 parts per trillion is what you should have. The stillborn calf liver tested at 610,000 parts per trillion of PFAS. So, like, if you ate that liver, let's just say it would be really, really bad for you. And they had a sample of the biosolids made by that manufacturer. They weren't able to sample the pile of it that was actually applied, but a similar sample from the manufacturer that also tested high for the same types of PFAS that were found on their property. So, you know, it's so such a heartbreaking story for these farming families, and this is happening at various levels, you know, all over the country, and most farms aren't testing for it, so they don't know if they experience problems on their farm. They don't know that it might be related to PFAS from biosolids.
Thank you for sharing that background information. And that really is a heartbreaking story. And to know that it's multiplied throughout the country in various levels is also really, really hard. What is the goal of the lawsuit?
The goal of the lawsuit is to establish that EPA needs to regulate certain PFAS and biosolids and to get them on a schedule to do it.
You are listening to Common Ground Radio on WERU 89.9 FM. I'm Holly Cederholm, and on today's show, we're talking about PFAS forever chemicals and the contamination of farmland, food, and water. PEER is coordinating a lawsuit against the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, calling for regulation of a primary source of PFAS contamination, sludge applied to farmland as fertilizer, under the Clean Water Act. I'm in conversation with Laura Dumay, staff counsel with PEER, and MOFCA's executive director, Sarah Alexander. Common Ground Radio can be heard on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on 89.9 FM and at weru.org. So, Sarah, I want to take us back to Maine momentarily. So, Maine is in a unique position in that in 2022, Maine passed LD 1911, which is a bill that bans the land application of sludge. So, Maine is actually a state where this is no longer happening, and it's the only such ban in the country to date of this kind. And so, given this, Sarah, I'm wondering if you could speak to MOFCA's role in the lawsuit and why MOFCA is choosing to join.
Well, I think Maine is significantly far ahead of the farmer PFAS response than most other states as well. And I've been asked about this repeatedly. Why Maine? Why is Maine leading on this? And I think the reality is that we're a small community that really stands behind our farmers, and we also have a real sense of justice and fairness. And as Laura was saying, like, farmers were told that this was a good thing. They were never told that this was something that was going to contaminate their land, contaminate their food, and really risk and financial ruin in their livelihood. And our farmers should not be left holding the bag on this. Our farmers have been so courageous in telling their story, both the farmers here in Maine, the farmers in Texas, other farmers in New Mexico, Colorado, Michigan, who have come forward to share their stories. And so we need a federal response. This should not be up to each state to figure out how to deal with this, both to regulate PFAS in agriculture, but also to how to support our farmers. So we feel a real responsibility, even though we are no longer spreading sledge here in Maine. There is constant pressure to roll back that law. So we're going to have to continue protecting it. But ultimately, we need federal regulation so that all states are protected and supported in this same way. We know this is a national issue. And so, EPA, I mean, I think one of the most interesting things I learned as we were preparing for this lawsuit is EPA has known for years. They identified these PFAS chemicals in sludge many years ago and have not taken action on it yet. And I think about, the Johnson County, Texas farmers were just impacted in 2022. That could have been prevented if we had had federal levels of regulation in place. There's no reason that sludge should have ended up on a farmland. And we need EPA to take strong action to support our farmers, but also to support our consumers and make sure that we have clean water and healthy and safe food.
For people who might not typically follow the events of a lawsuit against a governmental agency, how does that work? What are the steps that have been taken, and what are the steps that are coming?
When you sue a federal agency, for example, under the Clean Water Act, you're required to give the agency 60 days notice first. So you're going to tell the agency, hey, we're planning to sue you. And that's so that the agency can potentially solve the problem in the interim. So, prevent the time and expense of a lawsuit. So we did have some conversations with EPA. We know that they are at least working on looking at standards for two particular PFAS, PFOA and PFOS. However, we just weren't able to sort of agree on a schedule. We just didn't think they were doing it fast enough. And we also felt that they were seeking more information than they needed to. We feel that it can be regulated now without any sort of additional studies or information gathering. Then we went ahead and filed the suit once we were eligible after that 60 days had passed. The next step is for EPA to answer the lawsuit, which it will do by September. And then, we would go back and forth with what are called motions for summary judgment, potentially also, speak before the judge, argue the case before the judge, and then the judge will decide. Alternatively, the agency also, might negotiate a solution with us where we come up with a schedule that everyone is okay with, that then the court kind of gives us a stamp of approval to.
So I'm wondering what other ways there are to protect farmers and eaters from PFAS contamination in addition to the lawsuit. And Sarah, I wonder if you could speak to the work that Maine has been doing now and is hoping to do in the future.
Well, I think Maine really has set the roadmap for federal action, and that involves, I think, three big strategies. So the first is to turn off the tap on PFAS. And Maine passed a pretty strong consumer protection law that will phase out PFAS in all consumer products by 2032. That's been back and forth in the legislature over the last few years and has had some modifications, but ultimately, we need to get PFAS out of our products, out of these systems where, in many cases, I would say it's unnecessary to be in there and it's contributing to this massive problem down the line. So, turning off the tap on PFAS is the first thing. We've done that at the state level, and we need federal action on that as well. The second thing is getting a farmer safety net in place. So, of the farms that are contaminated, here in Maine, most of them have been able to find a path forward, but that's been because of significant support networks and safety nets that we've put in place here in Maine. So first, MOFCA, Maine and Maine Farm Land Trust set up our own emergency relief fund for farmers impacted with PFAS that could provide direct income replacement, testing support, health support, mental health support, research support, infrastructure pivots. And all of that is really farmer focused and farmer centered to make sure that each individual farm where the scenario is different is going to have a viable path forward if they want to continue farming in that area. The state then set up the state fund, which does the same thing. So $60 million was passed to go into that state support network and relief fund. And we're also now advocating for that same thing at the federal level. So we were able to work with our congressional delegation to get the Relief for Farmers Hit with PFAS Act included in the Senate version of the Farm Bill. We're very excited about that. We're hopeful that in the next year, the Farm Bill will be able to move forward and ultimately that will be able to be included. And I encourage all of our listeners to please contact your members of Congress and ask them to support that legislation. And you can do that on our website if you go to mofca.org/PFAS. And then the third part of the strategy is really related to food safety. So ensuring that, not only are we turning off the tap, and that means consumer products, but that also means, stopping sludge application, getting PFAS out of pesticides, taking PFAS out of the things that are ending up contaminating our food and water. But ultimately, we also need federal action on food safety, and that falls under the FDA. There are zero thresholds for what is considered safe in food at the federal level. But again, Maine has led the nation in setting the first and only food safety standards that exist in the country for both milk and meat, and looking at other thresholds as well. And we know, again, this needs federal action. Here in Maine, we're so proud of our local food system, but we still import 90% of our food from outside of the state. And so even though we now have one of the safest food supplies in the country in terms of our local food, we may still be exposed to PFAS in our food through what's being imported from other areas of the country. So we need federal action to address that.
So, Sarah, you just outlined a lot of your hopes for the immediate future in the food system in your three-pronged approach. But I'm wondering if you have anything to add, or Laura, you have things to add about what is the hope for the future of our food system when it comes to PFAS contamination, and what will it take for us to get there if there are additional things that you all want to speak to?
Yeah, I would echo Sarah. I think the ultimate goal is turning off the tap. It's banning all non-essential uses of PFAS because it's getting into our systems through the industries that create them. And these industries have known for decades that they're harmful and that they're out there.
Yeah, I would just add all of the things I said. And I think there's incredible opportunity for research, both to find alternatives that are bio-based, sustainable alternatives to PFAS. So there's some incredible research happening here in Maine around seaweed coatings and paper-based coatings and other things that could be really incredible opportunities to replace PFAS, but also research on getting PFAS out of our system. So I'm often asked, is there any remediation for PFAS in soil? And the answer is not yet. There's no real scalable solution for getting PFAS out of soil. But there is a lot of research that is happening, here in the state of Maine, but also around the country. And I think that if we can really focus attention on this, even though these are forever chemicals, this doesn't have to be a forever problem. And if we can address it now, we can really make progress for future generations so they're not dealing with the same issue and ultimately having the same health impacts. We didn't really get into, why is this even important? Laura mentioned, the impacts on the animals on that farm in Texas who were sick and dying. But farmers and humans are greatly impacted by this as well. This has really important health consequences for us as both directly impacted communities, but as a society as a whole, and the body burden that we're each carrying. All of us have PFAS in our systems because of this exposure. And so the health impacts of that are well documented, related to certain types of cancers, immune suppression, kidney disease, and other things. And if we want to have a healthy future, we need to eliminate these and other toxics out of our systems.
Yes, and I should have said before too that it wasn't just the animals that were impacted. The ranching families themselves have experienced strange, health issues since the dumping of the biosolids next door. And it's so stressful and it's so terrifying for them. And it's something that nobody should have to go through.
Sarah, you had mentioned earlier that there was around 60 farms in Maine that had been contaminated with PFAS, and only five have gone out of business. I'm wondering if you could speak to some of the solutions. Like, how were those farms able to stay in business given the contamination that they were dealing with?
Well, every farm, different puzzle, and how you put those pieces together looks different based on what they're producing, the levels of contamination, what is contaminated on their farm. But I think, what we've learned, and we're learning more every day, is that PFAS doesn't impact all crops in the same way. In terms of plant uptake, we know that it concentrates less in the fruits and the grains and root vegetables. And concentrates more highly in leafy greens. So one example might be if somebody was producing lettuce or leafy greens on a highly contaminated property, they can switch production to tomatoes or flowers or something, either another food that we're eating a different part of the plant or a different product entirely that may not be for consumption but is still for use. And then in terms of animal agriculture, we have learned and seen firsthand here in Maine that when we have animals that are contaminated, if they can have clean water and clean feed, those animals, will eliminate the PFAS out of their system. So we've seen this with several dairies here in Maine, that have been able to continue producing milk because they were able to get the levels down as the cows eliminated it out of their system. And there's so much more research, to be done on that, but we do know that there are pathways forward, if the farm, feels comfortable continuing on that piece of land.
In our final few minutes, is there anything else you'd like to add that we haven't covered yet today?
I would just encourage everyone listening to get involved, to talk to their legislators, to encourage their friends in other states to talk to their legislators, because this needs to be on everyone's radar.
Yeah, and on that note, I would say, Maine is out ahead. We've been leading the nation on this, but we need the strength to maintain that as people move on to other issues. This is still very much an important and critical issue for both our farms today, but also our communities. And it's going to take a while to really navigate through and see the solutions that we want to see. And again, folks can go to mofca.org/PFAS and get a lot more information on how to take action on all of the things that we've talked about today, both at the federal level and then here at the state level. And if for folks who are listening outside of Maine, I would really encourage them to also reach out to their state representatives and legislature, because we need other states to join the cause as well here and take action at the state level, which will ultimately help push for federal action as well.
Also, I should mention that PIER has two sign-on petitions. One is to tell the EPA to get PFAS out of pesticides, and one is to tell the EPA, to get PFAS out of biosolids, sewage sludge that's spread as fertilizer.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
This has been Common Ground Radio, which airs on the second Thursday of each month at 4 p.m. on WERU Community Radio 89.9 FM. Archives of previous episodes can be found on weru.org, as well as the WERU app. I'd like to thank my guests and the show's editor, Claire Boland. Stay tuned for more great programming.